Hello and welcome to the Paid Search Podcast. My name is Chris, and today we're going to talk about Google Ads. In fact, we're going to answer your Google Ads questions. It is episode 409, and I'm answering 8 questions. That's right, guys. Every episode is planned perfectly so that the number of questions coincides perfectly with the number of the episode. Episode 409, and I'm answering 8 questions. Don't ask how that is adding up mathematically. There's something special. I'm sure of it. I'm sure. So let's do something that I take pride in. Let's make every minute count on this podcast. And I am going to jump in immediately with the very first question and go straight from there. So question number one comes from Susan from the north of England. Susan says, I'm a relatively new supporter of your weekly podcast and listen to you in bulk while getting my daily steps. I'm finding the podcast really useful and the overall plan is to work through all of the episodes. Holy cow. Well, Susan, good luck. And I apologize for the first few. All right. I recently helped one of my customers take back the management of their Google Ads account from an agency. Air quotes there, agency. So obviously that's not a good sign. So where do we start? There was no apparent structure, strategy, or really much of any best practice with this agency that I can see at first glance. And it made me wonder if there's a way to tackle this, which gave priority to the important elements, if there even are some important elements, and is it worth it in these circumstances? We were trying to overlay a new customer-focused structure while trying to minimize disruption, but our strategy really doesn't align with the legacy campaign that is in place. Susan, I know exactly what you're talking about. I deal with this all the time because nobody calls me, nobody hires me as a Google Ads manager. I have plenty of my own clients, and nobody calls me when things are going great. They call me when things are wrong, and that's when all managers tend to get called, is when something goes wrong, something's bad, I need a manager to fix it. That's normal, right? I don't go to the doctor when I'm feeling well. I don't go get my car fixed when it's working perfectly, so it's understandable. So our job is to try and understand, what do we do? What do you do when you're presented with a massive mess of an account? What do you do when you're presented with something that may not even have success at all? There may be no value at all, you know, that's happening here. So let me answer this question in the best way that I can. The first part is, can you assess that there is some kind of value? And let me define value. So value should be based on either concrete ROAS of some kind. So return on ad spend. The ROAS may not be something that is actually a transactional value number. So you may not be able to tell how many sales, purchases, you know, signups, whatever has happened if it's not e-commerce or something that's tracking that. But ROAS for a client might just be how many conversions, how many opportunities, how many times has the phone rang? You know, so something concrete, what value has this been deriving? And the important thing to look at here is to actually separate out the conversions. There's actually a button at the campaign screen that you can hit segment and then conversion action. If you segment by conversion action, make sure that these conversions are not just, you know, people calling and, you know, the call is set for 1 second. And the client gets a lot of spam calls. So you know that a lot of these calls are just junk. You know, make sure that the quote-unquote conversions that are coming through are not people that are clicking on get directions. You know, I looked at a client's account the other day, and they had tons and tons of conversions. And when I investigated, it turned out that 90% of the conversions were people that were clicking get directions. So they were clicking on a Google business listing. This client does not have a shop. They don't have a place that the people go to. So it's a complete false conversion. So real no real return in that account. So number one is to establish, is there value happening? If the answer is no, start over. Start over. I actually have an old episode out there about, you know, how to restructure account, how to start over, how to begin again. I don't have the episode number on hand, but I know it's a rather popular episode. Go back and listen to that. It might be helpful, but I'll try and answer your question here. If you do find success, if there is some success, I often find that if a campaign is a giant mess, there's no reason to keep the legacy campaign there if it's so much chaos and clutter and confusion that it's unmanageable. You have no rhyme or reason to think why this keyword's getting this traffic or this keyword's getting that traffic. The best approach is to maybe both of these things. First, small, purposeful changes. If I do this, what happens? That's the main question you want to ask yourself. If I do this, what happens? If I do this, what happens? This doesn't look good. What if I turn this off? What happens? So this is an ongoing process. This is not a daily, you don't change it and then come back the next day and see what happened. We're talking week by week, month by month. So slowly over time, you are going to do this and test and see. The other option, and you could do is, you could do this at the same time, but the other option is start building a campaign based on, in my opinion, based on my account structure formula, which I'm going to get into a little bit later on the show. So stick around, because somebody actually asked a question about this in the show, and I'm going to give an answer. But, you know, following the 10 principles of Google Ads, which I did last year. So follow, maybe it was this year. I think it was this year. Follow up on that. Listen to that. And it'll talk about how to structure campaigns, how to decide how many ad groups you need. Most of the time, a crazy, disgusting campaign that's just absolute chaos will not be following that, because it was just built haphazardly. It was built with absolutely no real goal or structure in mind at all. Okay. So I hope that's helpful. And that is question number one. So we're going to move on to question number two. And before I do that, I want to remind you about Opteo. I talk about it every single week. This week is no exception. I actually cut out how many times people in these questions mention Opteo. I can tell you, if you send in a question and you're like, hey, I mentioned Opteo, I had to cut it out because there were so many people saying, I use Opteo and I do this with Opteo. People use it all the time that listen to this show. It is a growing phenomenon. It's an amazing tool. If you don't know what I'm talking about, open up your phone right now and go to opteo.com/PSP to sign up for this software that will help you do more in Google Ads, see more, understand more, make better decisions in Google Ads as it looks at your bids, your account structure, your keywords, your negative keywords, your impression share, your click-through rate, your clicks, your conversions, your cost per conversion, your ROAS. It looks at all these factors and gives you immediate feedback about where you need to improve. Red flags, warnings, things you may not see. An amazing software. You can get 2 months for free of this software. Try it for 2 months at opteo.com/PSP. So question number 2 of 8 is now coming from Derek. Derek says, greetings. Could you, the great Chris Schaefer, lord of manual bidding and renowned Google Ads warrior, this guy knows how to woo me. I like lord and warrior. Now we're talking. Would you please enlighten us with your keyword grouping methodology? Your knowledge on this topic would be an absolute game changer for many of the paid search podcast listeners and would be greatly appreciated. Derek, okay. So, good news is, Susan, apparently I put this question. You asked, question number one was from Susan and wanted to know about, you know, how to structure things and, you know, how to start over. Actually, Derek's question is what I was referring to. So, his question was, you know, how do you do your keyword grouping? And so, Derek, what I believe you're asking about, there's only one group of keywords in Google Ads. and that's ad groups. So I assume you're asking, how do I group my ad groups? And this is one of my 10 principles of Google Ads that I laid out a while back. I think it was episode 385, I think is when it begins. And the answer, in a very abbreviated, concise answer, is type and value. So everybody's listening to this show, an adult, you've probably been through multiple math classes, right? So you know that there's an X line and a Y line, right? Horizontal and vertical, right? So that is essentially how you must understand how ad groups should be broken out. Either something is going to run on a horizontal line. Let's call that the value line, right? So up and down, up and down. Something very high value, maybe very high on the, Y-axis. Let's say it's Y-axis. The up and down is Y-axis. Let's say that. I don't remember. Let's say very high up and down, moving down, up and down the Y-axis. So if something's very, very low on that, you come up with a keyword and you realize the keyword, how do I mow my lawn? Obviously, that's very low value for someone who does lawn care services. You do mowing services, right? But this person obviously doesn't know what they're doing. Maybe they'll want to hire someone to do it for them. Okay? Low value, but still possibly something you want to target. Now, someone else who does a search that says, hire lawn mowing company near me, very high value. Okay? Those two instances have defined 2 points on the value line. Top and bottom. Good and bad. Doesn't mean that you need to block one and target the other. Both of them could have value. So what you end up doing is creating an ad group for each. Now, you'll have to go back and listen to my episode about risk in Google Ads. It doesn't mean you bid the same. It doesn't mean that you approach these keywords in the same manner. It doesn't mean that they mean the same. So you shouldn't be getting clicks at the same value, but you could still get that same traffic. So it could be really interesting to try that. So the other side, right? Let's call it the X axis. X axis is type. Okay, the same company does snow removal. I'm struggling on the terms on this because I've only heard about snow removal. As a person in Texas here, I've never hired anyone for that. So forgive me if I stumble over this example. Very poorly planned example. I don't know what I'm talking about. But you hire someone for this snow removal, you silly northerners. And you also offer lawn irrigation services, right? Both two different services. Both are going to need different ad copy. Both might be worth the same. If someone hires you for snow removal and someone hires you for lawn irrigation installation, maybe they're worth the same to you. So value is not really that different, but they are definitely different types. You have now identified two different ad groups. So you can understand that in the same way that you can have something going up and down the Y-axis and up and down the X-axis, there can be stuff in different quadrants. You can have things in this section over here. This section over here, you can have different parts. So it can become quite complex, but the main idea is don't add so much complexity that you end up having 100 ad groups. Make firm decisions about what is important to you. How much budget do I have? Estimate how much you think that budget could handle. You know, if you assume that you're going to get $3 clicks, you know, and so that means that you'd be able to get 10 clicks a day because you're running $30 a day, about $1,000 a month. So at this point, you know, if you want to be able to get, you know, 2 clicks on each ad group, maybe you have 5 ad groups total, right? At least you're starting somewhere. Start with defined 5 different type and value ad groups and build those. That's my keyword grouping methodology. Hopefully simple and concise, and hopefully that is helpful, Derek. And thank you for the great praises that you've rained upon me. That's very always funny how people pull out the thesaurus whenever it comes to getting Chris to notice their question. And it works. I guess it does work. Terry. Okay, this is question number three. Terry from Canada sent in a question. And let me say this. Terry and a few other people sent in questions through my website, chrisschaefer.com. I just want to tell you, I don't always see those. I don't always, you know, I'm not in the podcast mindset when I'm in chrisschaefer.com management, Google Ads Manager mindset when it comes through on chrisschaefer.com email. But if you want to send something so that I'm thinking about the podcast when I see it, go to paidsearchpodcast.com. You can email me directly through that. The email is paidsearchpodcast@gmail.com. So you can email me there. So anyone who's sending questions to me through my website, you know, that's fine, but I'd prefer for them to go directly to paidsearchpodcast.com. paidsearchpodcast@gmail.com. Terry from Canada says, when your client gives you a monthly budget and you have to create several campaigns, how do you go about allocating the budget for each campaign? There are campaigns that are weighted more than others, but how would you go about figuring out exactly how much to dedicate to each campaign? Okay, Terry. So in this instance, there is a lot less to worry about. I think you're putting the heart. I think you're putting the cart before the horse in this point, in this example, because I actually worry less about how much budget to put into it. And I think about more about how much the bids are going to be here and how much risk I'm going to want to assess based on how much the bids are. So, for example, I have a search campaign and I have decided on all high quality, low funnel, very specific phrase and exact match keywords. Okay. And so therefore I gave these $15 bids. Okay. So I bid very aggressively. Now I built another campaign that I'm doing as a kind of phishing testing, broader, high funnel experiment campaign, right? I dumped a whole bunch of broad match keywords in, and that one I'm giving $2 bids. Okay. So I think you're starting to see where I go with this. It's not necessarily how much budget I allot to them. It's about how far these bids and how much risk I'm willing to take with these are worth it. Then there might be a display campaign I've built. Let's say this display campaign is showing for lots of different audiences. I have several different ad groups in here. And, you know, I'm only bidding 20 cents, 15 cents per bid on those. So I don't think about how much budget I want to go. I think about how much value I've assigned to each one of these. And if I put $100 into the first search campaign, the campaign that has the best quality traffic, it really needs a lot of that $100 because it's $15 a click, assuming the top dollar. Let's assume the top dollar for each one of them. $15 a click. So $100, if I have $100 total, I'm going to put more of the $100 into the areas that are going to need the most attention, need the most movement. The best value that I'm going to be getting out of this is going to be coming from those low funnel. That's my best bet on traffic that will convert. So I'm going to put the biggest amount of my budget there. And your clue, you say, well, I don't know where to put it. Well, your clue for that is, well, where are you spending the highest bids? Right? Where is your money most aggressive? Where are your bids most aggressive? Well, that's probably where your budget should go, assuming you don't have, you know, a whole lot of conversions to look at and stuff like that. So then let's say I have my search campaign, $2 bids, and my display campaign at 35 cents. Well, for each one of these, if I put $5 into my 35 cent, 20 cent, whatever it was, display campaign, $5 goes a pretty long way, So that's fine. I put $5 into that, and then my $2 bids, $5 won't go as far, so maybe I end up putting $15, maybe $20 into that one. Okay, so that's based on how much I'm putting value into these, what my bids are, the ratio of the bids to the budget, how much movement I'm going to get, and it becomes crystal clear when you flip that scenario. Let's say I put $100 into display at 35 cents. I am going to spend all of that money on 35 cent, 20 cent clicks on the display network, which is likely not going to be very good traffic at all. Very high risk. Horrible idea, right? It becomes obvious. Well, of course you would put the budget into the stuff that makes the most value, the biggest chances of bringing in a conversion. That's how you make that decision. So hopefully that is useful. And I very rarely use, if anyone's curious, I very rarely use shared budgets. Shared budgets are largely useless in most cases because not all campaigns have the same value. There's different values for each campaign, each keyword, each segment. And I don't really want to share budgets because I don't want to do the same amount of spend in each one of them because they each have their own levels of value. So I hope that is useful. Thank you for your question, Terry. Next we go to Andrea from Vienna. Question number 4. Thank you for your great podcast and your continued good recommendations for Google Ads. I have a customer, a lawyer, who has his office in a small city in Germany. There are 2 campaigns. One campaign is for people near the city with keywords like lawyer, inheritance, law, lawyer, etc. The second campaign is for all of Germany with keywords like lawyer and the city, inheritance, lawyer, and city. Does it make sense to use a portfolio bidding strategy here? Or even bigger question, when does it make sense to use portfolio bidding strategy at all? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I, as wise as I am, sometimes am conflicted about, you know, is this the right answer? Well, about a year ago, I had a co-host on this show, and it was sometimes interesting to hear other people's opinions. So I have an idea about how I would answer this, but I consulted my friend Joey Bidner, who's been on the show multiple times. I consulted him on this, sent him an email, and he very graciously replied back with an email. And I, Andrea, would like to answer your question by outsourcing it to Joey, because I thought Joey had a great answer, and I agree largely. So I'm going to read his answer and then come back and maybe offer a few more points. Joey says, in answer to Andrea, I think using portfolio bidding strategy would work, but it would simply be a band-aid for a structure problem that's already there. Why not just include both of these ad groups into one campaign? If the radius target is the same, then I would share the budget between the targets by means of having them in one campaign. If the landing pages are all the same, I would even put all of those keywords in one ad group. There's no need to use structure for data observation between keywords. And I'm going to pause here. That's not all the answer, but that is such a good point. I want to read that again. Not the whole thing, but I just want to restate what he says here. There's no need to use structure. So let me say that in simple vocabulary. There's no need to have campaigns simply for the purpose of data observation. So if, Andrea, you have split these up simply because they're two different things and the client said, well, I want to do this and I want to do this. And you thought, well, this is a campaign and this is a campaign. So I have two thises and, you know, there's no reason to do that. Just because they're two thises and two thats don't mean that they should be different campaigns. There's no logical reason to do that. You have different campaigns because you need to use different bidding strategy, different geographic targeting, different ad schedule. There's a lot of reasons why you might do it, different budgets, but not just because it's something different than the other thing, right? You can refer back to the first part of the show where I talked about my discussion of ad group structure, right? So that answers a little bit of that. But back to Joey. Joey, sorry for interrupting you. Please continue. Joey says, that said, if the radius targets of the campaigns are different, greater Germany for the general terms and narrow target for the terms here, the answer is, personally, I would not use portfolio bidding strategy in this case. If you were to use a portfolio strategy, Google would decide which campaign gets the share of the budget without much consideration over what each campaign might be worth to you. Perhaps the leads that are closer proximity tend to convert better, and Google won't know the difference unless you go through the complex process of importing leads back to Google and sharing the conversion data and all this kind of stuff. That's probably not happening here. I would give each campaign its own budget. That said, if you don't really care which campaign gets more or less budget and you just want the machine to make the decisions for you, you could set the portfolio bidding strategy. You could set the portfolio bidding strategy up and it would accomplish that. Regarding the question of when it makes sense to use a portfolio bidding strategy, I rarely use it to share a budget or a spend between the campaigns. I use it mostly for that special little function to set a max CPC alongside an automated bidding strategy, something that is very unique to portfolio bidding strategies. And I use a very unique situation like this case, and I would give the portfolio bidding strategy in one campaign in order to use that CPC bid limit. So that is Joey's very, very well said answer. I love his point about not making the mistake of structuring something simply because it's two different things or simply because you want to keep track of it. That's a mistake. There's no reason to do that. You're complicating things. You're adding complexity when complexity only can hurt you. So, Andrea, I completely agree with Joey. When I read this, I thought, before I emailed Joey, I thought, why? Why? It doesn't seem like portfolio bidding makes any sense. And he and I agree on that. So I don't think there's any need to do it. Either you decide one needs max clicks and the other one needs max conversions, or maybe both of them need target CPA and you have different target CPAs set based on the value of those local versus wider traffic. Or you just decide, you know what, he just wants traffic of people in Germany that are searching for this one thing, period. So put them into one campaign. And the only time that I like to use portfolio bidding, as Joey said, is because of that one special feature that is available nowhere else. And that's where you can put a max CPC in place and utilize automated bidding. It's really so special that I worry that it might have an expiration date. You know, as soon as there's something kind of unique buried in Google Ads, the Google Ads fairy seems to find it and sprinkle her magic dust over it, and poof, it'll be gone. Kind of like modified broad match keywords and average position and search terms that we used to have. So, all right, continuing on. Question number 5, John in Colorado. Does Google penalize you for starting and stopping your ads? For example, I start my ads in March before our season really kicks off, and then turn off the campaign when we have snow days, because in our industry, no one calls and thinks about lawn care when there's snow on the ground. When it gets nice, I turn everything back on. Once I get into April, I leave them on throughout the entire season. If you're a seasonal business, is it recommended to turn on your ads a few weeks before your season starts so you can adjust and be ready for the, here it comes, Google algorithm? And John said it right there. Thank you, John, for the question. I know I'll be speaking to you soon. John signed up for a Google Ads coaching session, which you can do so as well at chrisschafer.com. John, you said it right there, and so I'm going to answer the question assuming you are utilizing max conversions, target CPA, things like that. And we're going to get to the root of the issue in a moment, but The short answer is this. Yes, I do think that it can hurt the campaign. If you are leaning into Google algorithm stuff, I mean, there's a lot of Google algorithm stuff, and I'm going to analyze that in a minute. But if you're leaning into that, yes, I think it can hurt you. I don't think you use the word penalized. I don't think you're penalized, but I think it can hurt you. So what is Google algorithm? What do I mean? You know, does this mean you, John? Does this mean other people? Well, if you're running a campaign that's got one ad group and 50, 60 broad match keywords, and you're running max conversions or maybe target CPA, you are 100% leaned in to the Google mysterious algorithm. That's you. And it would be bad for you to pause things off and on. I'd go even further. It's not just bad to turn them on and off. It's bad to change your budget back and forth, up and down, up and down. It can affect things. Why? Well, because it's a black box of mystery. We don't know why things can be affected. And if you have multiple ad groups, let's say you have three ad groups, but you're still mainly using broad match keywords, automated bidding, max conversions, target CPA, target ROAS, maximize conversion value, any of these full-on automated, you can't even change the bids. You're like, bids, I don't choose bids. I just click and Google does it. That's you. You're leaning into the algorithm, and it is dangerous for you to make changes because you've put your faith into an algorithm that you can't knock on the door, look into it, and see what's happening. The engine on the inside is a mystery to you, and if you shut the fuel off and just crank it up the next day, it may not get as many clicks as it got. I've seen it happen plenty of times. Other times it comes back just fine, but there is a danger there. So you're not penalized, but it can hurt you. So how can you get yourself free of this penalization of pausing, lowering budget? Well, it's not to lean so heavily on the algorithm. And you know, if you don't know what that is, then I worry if you haven't been listening to the podcast really as much as you should, because that's what I talk about here. I mean, that should be the name of the podcast: how to break free of the algorithm. Actually, I really like that. Okay, I think I just found the title of my next episode. So you guys just saw brainstorming right there. Me, myself, and I just came up with that, and I'm probably going to do that. So how to break free of the algorithm. But that is what I talk about: how to garner more control from Google Ads, how to get out of the constriction that you're put under by, you know, just letting the algorithm do it for you without having any control. You know, this means using other strategies, risk management, match types that give you more control over the traffic quality that you're getting. I mean, this is what it looks like. So hopefully that answers your question, and I appreciate you seeing it in. Next, we have question number 6 from the Philippines, Sam from the Philippines. I've been listening to you for the past few months, and I've gained a lot of knowledge and improved the quality of work I'm doing with my client's Google Ads account. Oh, fellow manager. I am from the Philippines. The regular job salaries here are so little, I decided to quit my job and focus on Google Ads management. So my question is very different from the topics you usually talk about on the podcast. My question is, as a freelancer, what advice will you give an entry to intermediate level Google Ads specialist who wants to become an expert in this industry? What should we do to become an expert? All right, Sam, good question. And let's go through it. So first, and my first advice is, don't specialize in one specific thing. Don't specialize in one specific industry. Now, I know that sounds crazy and kind of an odd thing to start with, but hear me out. I think you should take all the jobs that you can get. I think you should work in as many industries as you possibly can. Get as much experience as you possibly can with e-commerce, lead generation, you know, everything. Search, display, YouTube. If you can get a client that has a certain thing, I mean, you should learn from that. One way to do it is you work in an agency. I mean, that's one way to try and get a job in an agency. You know, bring yourself up to a level that they'll hire you. Kind of tough to do because they want to hire people that have some experience, but you can't get the experience. You know, so that's a whole other thing. But I don't find that a good thing to do is say I am the lawn care Google Ads specialist. You know, because you're never really going to learn much beyond just that, and it's going to be harder to get clients. So you should try everything. Do as much as you can. So you say, well, how do I try it? How do I get more? Well, I think one of the best things in today's economy is to use the contracting websites. There's a lot of contracting websites out there. I used a contracting website a lot, and I garnered a ton of work to the point that I actually deleted my profile and just went my own way, started my own thing, taking my clients myself rather than through the contracting website. But you know, there's a lot out there. There's a lot of sites where people are posting jobs, need to hire a Google Ads manager for help building a campaign, or, you know, there's a ton of jobs out there. Find work through there and just try and get as much experience as you can. You may find that you do pretty well in certain areas. And furthermore, as you're learning, I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think you're in a good place. And what I mean by that is I don't think you should get your instruction straight from Google. I don't think that you should use their quote-unquote best practices, because I can't tell you how much business I get from people that go down the quote-unquote best practices route and start a Performance Max and, you know, follow the normal things that are on the little checklist and end up having an absolutely horrendous campaign, a total disaster. So I think that you should really try and learn, how to do things the smart way. And you wonder, well, what's the smart way? I mean, where do I learn things like this? Well, the best way to think about it is when you get a new client, treat it as though it's your own money that you're spending. Sometimes that might mean that you don't spend as much money as they think you should. Maybe you start with a smaller budget. Understand that this money is real. This is someone's money you're spending, and that you shouldn't just spend it just because they say to spend it and try and spend it as fast as you can. Spend it as though it was your own. Spend it like what you would do for your own business. These are real people you're working with. In fact, these people that you're working with are providing jobs to other people. So the impact that you make to these businesses affect other families, other people's lives. So it can be a very rewarding and very scary industry to be in, and don't treat it lightly. You know, don't just follow what a Google suggestion, recommendation says, because most of the time it's not right for the business. It's right for Google. Okay, so we've got two more. That was question number 6. We're moving on to question number 7. There are 8. And real quick, before I hit the last two, I want to remind you about Optio.com. That's Optio.com/PSP. Opteo.com/PSP to become even better at Google Ads and to have more time to get it done. Because it is a smart tool designed for smart managers to make better decisions. All right, so we have a question from New Jersey. Salik from New Jersey says, in terms of keyword insertion headlines, so DKI, so we're referring to dynamic keyword insertion, for broad term keywords, does Google insert the search term or does it insert the keyword? This one's a really easy one, but I included it because a lot of people might have this question. First, dynamic insertion headlines, dynamically inserted headlines are basically when you put little brackets around something, and you have to look it up to know exactly how to do it, but you can put in certain brackets into a headline and cause Google to insert something into that headline dynamically based on how the person searches. And here's the important part. It does not insert the person's search term. It inserts the keyword. So if you have a broad match keyword that is lawn care, and you put a DKI and the person searches for snow removal services near me, it will say in the headline, lawn care. This is something I'm going to skim over quickly, but let me say this. I do not like DKI. I'm not a fan of it. I honestly consider it to be a very lazy way of management. No offense, Salik, but I don't like it because it is a clue to me that someone didn't take the time to follow the pattern of type and value in their ad groups. They didn't follow the process that would force them to write ad copy based on the value, based on the type of service. They just kind of threw stuff in, put a DKI ad in, and done. Well, that's not very good, and it won't work that well, you know, because a broad match keyword for lawn care could definitely trigger a search for snow shoveling services, and now you just got a bad ad about lawn care showing for someone who wants snow shoveling. Huh? Whose fault is that? That's not Google's. Yeah. Question number 8 and the last one of the show is Liam. Liam says, I've been a bit confused on if adding negative keywords to a search campaign has an effect on the search impression share. Any help is appreciated. So the answer is it absolutely affects the search impression share. And the best way to explain this is by going into extremes. Let's say that you have some broad match keywords. Lawn care seems to be the theme for this week. So we'll just say you have a lot of, 400 broad match keywords, and they're all things just like lawn care, grass care, front lawn care, yard care, things like that. Just really broad terms that can get a gazillion different search terms. Okay, so let's say the search impression share is 20%. Right? You're getting 20% search impression share. Very, very low. Now, if you then took and added, let's say, 3,000 negative keywords, and they're all things like buy and cheap and who and what and how, one word, broad match keywords that just cover thousands of different English words that are very concrete words, the, us, near, and me, all these different terms, what do you think will happen to the search impression share? It would go up. It goes up because now the auctions in which you are eligible to show are much smaller. So you're consuming more of your impression potential. So your world of potential impressions have shrunk, and now you have a better search impression share. So a good negative keyword practice is to, by implementing negative keywords and controlling your bids properly and using the right risk management factors, you actually can't help but slowly grow your search impression share as you start to carve off unwanted areas of your impression share. You just slowly stop getting these impressions because you blocked it. You realize, oh, I don't want to show up for the word snow anymore. We don't do snow. We don't have that kind of equipment. So you block off the word snow. So now you just carved off maybe 1 or 2% of the impressions that you used to get. Just ticked up. You just got a little bit more impression share. Just like that. So that is what adding negative keywords can do to a search campaign. It's great. If you use negative keywords the right way, you can slowly improve and whittle down the fat, the junk, the unwanted stuff on a search campaign. And that is it. If you'd like to send in a question, paidsearchpodcast.com, or you can email me directly, paidsearchpodcast@gmail.com. Please send emails to that address so that I can see them. And you can also reach me if you want consulting, management, if you don't want to ask me a question in a professional way about how I might be able to help your business, your Google Ads, you can reach me at chrisschafer.com. And as always, I'll catch you next week.